Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast episode 237, which we're closing on the end of the year.
I thought you were going to be like, we're closing in on 300, and I'm like, yeah, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
We're closing on 250.
That'll be, I mean, we could be in a Road Warrior apocalypse by 300.
That's true.
What are we closing in on?
End of year.
End of the year, yes.
So, like, because of the weirdness of Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve both falling on a Tuesday, I believe next week could be the last podcast for the year.
That's true. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my.
Which means we
may... My God.
Depending on how schedules shake out, we may do end of year, our best of the year next week. So y'all better get to work.
Sure. You're talking about our listeners, right?
Yes, our listeners.
Not Nick and I, who will probably wait until the last moment.
I was going to say, actually, you've got the leg up on me this time. You actually started.
I started making a list, and then it got busy with the holiday.
I haven't even begun.
Randy, when are you going to start?
This gentleman is why you do it all year, in quiet moments, so that when you get to the end of the year...
But I always have to agree with Dave on this, though, because what if something comes out the last week of December
and you're to the list?
And you're like, but if we already do it and we have two more weeks of stuff worth coming out, that stuff should be included.
That stuff's not going to... Nothing good ever comes out the last 2 weeks of the year.
Doesn't Conan come out? Doesn't that potentially...
Claws is just about to hit from Grant Morrison.
Claws is about to have...
Which is also a Conan-type comic. All the Barbarian books are hitting, Randy.
You know what?
Think about it.
Here's the thing. You can cheat those into your list next year.
Oh, no. Those won't be 2019 comics.
Y'all are ridiculous.
Yeah, uh-huh.
All right. So before we get into the news of the week, real quick, just a reminder, we're doing Keyforge tournaments every Saturday in December. We had about 6 people come out.
Yeah, a good turnout.
Had a good time. They played on Nick's fancy new game table.
Yes, which is super neat to look at.
Yep.
And, you know, it smells... I like the smell of, like, wood and carpentry and stuff like that. And I was like, I'm going to smell this table because I love it. And but I guess, like, after you put the stain on it,
yes,
that's got a sort of different thing going on. And I'm like, now I'm high.
So anyway, it's a really nice, neat game table, but I guess the big takeaway is it smells good.
Yes.
And I will be building
Dave will be passed out next to it while y'all are gaming.
Passed out. And
please go easy on me. Do not frat boy draw on my face.
And hallucinating and muttering to himself.
He does that anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
I can see the nexus of all realities, man. I see Galactus. I can see through the source wall.
Devil Slayer speaks to me. We are going to be closed starting at 7 p.m. on Monday, December 24th and Monday, December 31st. We'll be closed all day on Tuesday, December 25th and Tuesday, January 1st. We will have comics both weeks, those Wednesdays. The week of Christmas is a lighter week, but the week of New Year's I expect to be a pretty big week of comics.
Yeah.
And then coming in January 19th and 20th, we'll have our Magic the Gathering Ravnica Allegiance pre-release. Okay, news. We're going to start with the big news, which is Avengers has a title and a trailer.
Ah, I should have, before this, I should have watched it a second time.
I should have watched it a seventh or eighth time.
So I want to get the gripey thing out of the way.
Okay.
Did they really need to hold on to this title? Because they actually said the title in Avengers Infinity War.
No, they did not need to hold on to this title.
I feel like that is the... Right, it was a silly thing.
The word on the street was that it was going to have something revelatory and it, like, that would reveal something about it. And just saying Endgame... I don't think
it's
right?
A little kind of womp-womp.
Yeah. like you made a big deal out of it, and it's not like, it's not Avengers 4, the death of Cap.
Here's the
right,
other thing.
Right.
The Russo Brothers have not lied about it, too.
Yeah, no, they did, completely.
So people asked if there was Endgame, and I'm like, no, it's not Endgame. So here's where
I know it's Avengers Endgame.
Here's where I stand on this. It wasn't necessary, it was a bit of overhype, but I understand why you want to hype your movie.
Yeah.
So, the interesting thing is that as casual Marvel movie fan, it had zero impact on me. Like, I was not like, what's the title?
Right. Only Randy was like that.
Yep.
Yes. I was. And I am well pleased.
He was, yeah.
As you watched it, you licked your lips and said, I am satiated.
Yes. That's actually true. I'm glad
somebody
we got the trailer.
Please make that image.
I really liked this trailer, as you would expect, because I like all the Marvel.
Well, I like this trailer because it doesn't tell you diddly squat.
It's true. Tells you Ant-Man's back.
I like the trailer as well, and I think they struck just the right tone.
Yeah.
Which is to say, you felt the weight of the previous one. Uh-huh. It looked like they were, like, absolutely on the ropes. And yet, by end of the trailer, it's still a Marvel movie, and there's got to be a little bit of lightness in there, and you have that awesome Ant-Man guest spot.
Yep.
And you had a sad, angry Hawkeye.
Yep.
Ronan.
Dressed in Ronan outfit.
Right, so I don't know if people, like, even, because that was a little bit of a flash in the pan. I'm like, do people know who Ronan
is? He actually was Ronan for a few years.
That's what I know, but, like, I said this on a group that,
like, I expect a lot of our people know about it.
I said this on a group of, like, this, like, a spoiler group that popped up after Avengers, where they talk about it in 24. And someone was talking about Ronan, and I'm like, yeah, that's great. I don't even like Ronan. He's a dumb Bendis character, but I was kind of psyched to see it in the Marvel, which... It's not uncommon. The movies have rescued a ton of dumb Marvel Bendis concepts.
And Miller.
We've talked about, they do kind of what Batman the Animated Series did for those villains. Pick the very best of them. Or even sometimes find a villain who's never quite been gotten right, or character or whatever, and find out what could be good in them.
Someone in that group posted about this, and they said something about Ronan and how great he was, and I'm like, I'm surprised people were surprised. It seems like a natural thing. And I'm like, well... He was kind of a... This is kind of an obscure... That's a deep cut. And he's like, he was Ronan for longer than Echo or someone else. This guy, Ronan was like his favorite character. And Bendis is what got him into Avengers.
Yeah.
And so the thing is, there are a lot of people out there like that. Like, the Avengers... Their Avengers were Bendis... I mean, there's more fans of Bendis Avengers than there are of the Avengers that are good. Because Bendis' Avengers was the most financially successful of any of the Avengers teams.
All right. I mean, there's, like, you know, probably more people saw the... Teen Titans of the early 2000s than read new Teen Titans in what would be considered its peak era. More people saw X-Men 1990s cartoon than read X-Men during its peak in, like, the 70s and early 80s.
So we're going to have Wolverine in the Marvel Universe, and then we can have new Avengers.
Nope.
And he'll be an Avenger.
Yeah, he will. I mean, here's the thing. Spider-Man's an Avenger, and I like it in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, so anything could work. A different version of Wolverine, where it's not Captain America recruiting him to be his private killer. I can see that working.
Yeah. Let's quick flashback on Ronan. I actually, in the comics, what happened? Hawkeye had been killed?
Hawkeye died in Bendis' stupid disassembled thing.
Yep.
Then he came back.
How'd he come back?
Nobody knows.
I forget.
All right. And
he came back and he was Ronan.
And was he like, I'm embarrassed of shooting arrows, I want to use a sword?
Well, he had given his bow to Kate Bishop.
And he hid his identity.
Okay.
He was hiding his identity as Ronan.
He was... Who was the guy who trained him way back when?
Trickshot.
Yeah.
But also Swordsman.
That's a Randy question.
It was Swordsman, but Trickshot was the guy revealed to be his trainer in Solo Avengers, because I believe it was Mark Gruenwald was like, why would a swordsman teach him how to be the best bow shot? There must have been a guy who taught him how to use a bow. So they invented this guy Trickshot at the carnival, who trained him, and also his brother Barney, who is a criminal as well.
As a kid, I somehow randomly had one old...
I knew his brother thing, but...
I had one old issue of Avengers, and there was, like, Avengers number 58 or something like that, and in it showed that guy who trained him. I guess it was the swordsman originally. The swordsman. That was who it was. And, you know, you can make an argument that swordsmen, like, swords were his thing, but he was into all the medieval stuff, including bows.
Yeah.
But he turns out to be a jerk, and Hawkeye has to take him down. So, the swords and stuff is an okay fit for him, I think,
sure,
though.
Sure, why not?
Well,
I mean, it's less a fit for the comics Hawkeye, where it didn't make a ton of sense, because Bendis doesn't think about anything. I'm going to see how many times I can insult Bendis in this podcast.
You know, he's not listening, right, Randy?
I hope he is. But in the movies, Hawkeye is this badass secret agent.
Right.
So it makes sense that he has weapons training.
He could come back as a guy who just has Uzis.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he's very much the Ultimates Hawkeye.
I don't think any of us are huge fans of David Finch, but I do think that was one of his stronger costume designs.
It's a good costume.
It is.
Yeah.
What was the meme that came out of this about Thor?
So many. Thor's rap album.
Yeah, it looks like Thor's about to drop some sick beats on Thanos or whatever.
Yeah,
or some sick rhymes.
Yeah, there's been any number of memes. Cap's shaving his beard.
Yeah.
Hawkeye losing his family. How did he get here? Ant Man.
Everyone expected Captain Marvel.
Ant Man, Marvel, and then Ant Man's gonna be the one to say
Ant-Man.
Yeah. Lots of memes.
Yep. Marvel has created a good product, and that has created a fair number of good memes.
Also, the opening with Tony's really good.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. He gets to be all serious.
So
everybody's scared for Tony and Cap, like they probably should be. And that means that Marvel's got them hooked with the drama, and legitimately, those two characters are either or both could easily get lost.
Well, and that's the great thing. We don't know what's going to happen. We have no idea. Like, the comics don't really provide much in the way of hints here.
No. This one is all on the Russos, honestly.
Like,
and what is the screenwriter's name? McFeely? Not McFeely.
Marcus and McFeely.
Yeah, McFeely. Yeah.
But also, like, kind of the on a meta level, the unique pressures of a live-action series with actors who must, by their nature, come and go.
Yep.
And occasionally leave contracts and stuff behind. So we don't know the behind-the-scenes stuff on that, but that surely has a bearing on it.
Yeah.
I mean, we also got that the movie got moved up, which was cool.
April.
Instead of May, it's April 26th.
Yes. They're like, we don't need to worry about the special effects too much.
So we're getting Captain Marvel, and then, like, just over 2 months, or, like, under 2 months, maybe, even.
Yeah.
We're getting Infinity.
No, it's 2 months.
Is it 2 months?
Yeah, because Captain Marvel's late in February.
Yeah. And then 2 months after that, we're getting Spider-Man, which, apparently, that trailer was shown at Brazil, and we're not going to get that, probably.
Why'd Brazil get it?
Brazil is
there
where
was a bit,
Spider-Man originated, actually.
No, it was a big convention. I forget. Like, it was like Sony did it or something.
Yeah.
I want more of Randy's story.
So, yeah, originally, people don't know this about Stan Lee, but he actually is Brazilian.
Oh, wow. Neat.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Stan Lee got a lot of Brazilians. He used to do Brazilian waxing. And as an homage to how Stan Lee would wax himself, they premiered the Spider-Man trailer in Brazil.
And in memory. In loving memory.
Loving memory of Stan Lee's bikini wax.
I am going to protest this particular podcast myself and see how many people I can get behind it.
I'm going to join.
All the pro-Bendis people will be on board with it. All right. So let's turn from that trailer to the Brightburn trailer, which is James Gunn producing, he's not writing or directing, a new trailer called Brightburn that is about what if Superman was evil.
I knew there was a trailer I didn't watch.
It's actually, the ad is somewhat subtle, but clearly, people liken it to what, like, The Bad Seed, or like Village of the Damned, one of those things about evil kids, or sociopathic kids. And but I mean, like, it uses all the iconography we're used to seeing in Superman movies and comics, a ship crashing, in a farmland, a husband and wife who go out and find the kid one night.
Yep.
They're raising him, clearly, but he's kind of kept off to the side in shadows and all this. And I think, is there some shot where he's, like standing there hovering, but he's got, like, this creepy, like, bag over his head or something?
Yeah, I believe
and he looks like some kind of, it looks like some horror thing, like how Superman would look if Scarecrow had just dropped some poison in you.
Right.
Anyway, it is an eerie trailer. The tone is creepy throughout. Like, you see the mom hiding behind some steel door, and then the door suddenly starts to, like, the glow of, like, clearly heat vision or something on the outside as it's melting and getting wrenched apart. But, like, I'm talking, like, one-to-one Superman powers and iconography.
Much. Huh.
And I was, I guess, surprised and kind of pleased, I guess, that myself and a number of friends were kind of like, kind of not what we want to see James Gunn do or what we want to see done with Superman type icons.
Right, I can understand, but if Gunn's just producing or, very much involved.
And certainly in our own circles in the comics industry, there's been about a million stories of some sort of Superman gone bad.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, specifically doing it as kind of like a, I guess, sociopathic kid or something like that, is not something I particularly remember seeing. It's usually, in this world, he was, he's become a fascist or whatever.
Right.
You know what I thought that was interesting was that somebody felt that it had kind of a coded, not like, maybe not intentionally, but a kind of fear of the other and, like, autistic kids and things like that.
Yeah, I can see that.
And there is a little bit of, like, yes, my kid is, something's wrong with him, and there's a little bit of, what was it, we need to talk about Kevin, and that was like one of the most disturbing
movie.
So disturbing that, like, I actually kind of didn't like it.
I mean, it's great acting on part of
I can say,
and
it was well crafted if the sole goal was to make every scene misery.
I can get behind that statement.
They were successful at that.
Yeah.
But anyway, Nikki, you should watch the trailer. I'll be curious to hear what you think on it. I do think Superman's got a pretty robust mythology and has survived lo the many decades.
Sure.
But, yeah, a friend of mine was like...
I mean, I have to ask the question. Yeah. Is it that sort of self-contained story about this child tormenting his like parents, or is there a broader
they're
story?
They're definitely riffing on the what if Superman was evil.
But I think Nick is like it's not just him terrifying them. I think there is like a what does this mean to the world?
Yeah, I was gonna say, is there a larger other than just the farm?
It is mostly isolated to there, but I think there's probably some incident like that where you glimpse something in the city happening, and you're like, oh, did he go off on his own, and what is he doing?
If it was more just on the farm, sort of like kind of bottle
it's not
episode,
like they're just being
kind of...
it's not like they're just being hunted by their crazy kid on the farm or something like that. Because I think his powers are like so well above and beyond them that presumably, if he wanted to kill them, he could.
Yeah.
I think it's probably more about, like... is some kind of weird, almost allegory of, like, trying to... dealing with a kid who is sociopathic.
Okay. I mean, I'll watch the trailer. I mean, this sort of rings a bell with, like, Chronicle and things like that. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
Kind of a horror take on that. And yeah. I don't know if that necessarily... interests me.
I did think like it looked like it was fairly well done for what it was.
Yeah.
I don't need dark superheroes in general.
Yeah.
It's not my thing.
Yeah. I think the notion that like people might start to be like, yeah, Superman's kind of lame. This creepy ass Superman is probably more like what it would be like, you know.
Yeah, and I'm already seeing that from friends and I'm like, no.
Yeah.
it upsets me.
Superman is Superman.
Right. If even the creator of Preacher is like, you need to get behind this guy,
yeah.
then step off with your horror versions. Yep.
There was a trailer for Umbrella Academy on Netflix.
Yeah.
I wasn't impressed.
I thought it was okay. I thought it was interesting. I mean, it's Ellen Page, and it's got a few other people, yeah. And I'm like, I'll watch it regardless.
The thing that struck me the most is it reminds me of the Marvel Netflix stuff, where it's like they seem embarrassed about the costumes and stuff, and... Umbrella Academy is a larger life. There's like a gorilla boy, and there's like the costumes. The iconography of Umbrella Academy was half of why I liked it.
Yeah. Quick backtrack here. It's a Gerard Way's comic for Dark Horse. He's done a couple different miniseries.
Two, yeah.
Three,
and
3 years on.
I haven't really read it. So that led me to watch this trailer with fairly open eyes, and also be like, eh. But for different reasons, I just thought it was like it looks well made, but like I kind of wanted some characters to hang my interest around, and yeah. I wasn't quite there. Ellen Page, just by virtue of being a strong actress, was the person I was most interested in, but they didn't really show her doing anything.
And her track record with movies is not amazing.
No, either. It's pretty bad.
She did the remake of Flatliners.
Oh, boy. just real quick, though, remind me of the baseline premise of Umbrella Academy.
There's a bunch of children who are special. This weird scientist adopts, like, six of them.
Yeah.
They have family drama, and then they have to save the world.
And it's a little bit... It's a very heightened reality.
It's Grant Morrison-esque.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very Doom Patrol.
I think even Gerard Way got, like, writing ideas from Morrison himself.
Right.
Because
they're
friends.
And since Way would go on to actually literally do the Doom Patrol kind of in something of an echo of Morrison's, that makes sense.
I just feel like Umbrella Academy, if it was going to work, needed to be big and larger than life and poppy and weird. And this looked very... boring and downer.
Well, and this could also just be trailer, horrible trailer making.
Yeah, that's
true.
Because
there was a monkey in there towards the end of the trailer.
Well, we know sometimes they'll do that thing where the first trailer is kind of for the general audiences and they don't want to scare them off with too much weirdness.
Yeah.
But that also probably means that it's not super weird or that they're changing it up a little bit. Do you think it's going to be changed as much change as, say, iZombie was?
Well, see, iZombie was changed for the better.
That's true.
iZombie works great. It's just I don't know. For some reason,
are the characters? Do they have any depth in Umbrella Academy?
Some, but Gerard Way is definitely more of a.
It's more about the ride, right?
Yeah. It's more about the ride.
Yeah. I wonder if they, you know, when you've got TV and you've got actors like Ellen Page, I imagine they probably want to delve a little bit more into character stuff.
I was trying to remember who exactly was like involved with the directing and like writing of this, as opposed to. Because that could hold a lot of...
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's a first trailer, but it definitely... Coming off of them not doing great with sci-fi stuff in general, like, Bright was a disappointment. The Marvel Netflix stuff...
I liked Bright.
There's nothing wrong with Bright or their Marvel Netflix stuff. It's just not great. And I think we're at the point where we should be expecting great. So I hold Netflix especially to a higher standard because Netflix is capable of something like Altered Carbon, or Stranger Things, or Haunting of Hill House,
or Fuller House.
Stop. But that's the issue.
Have you looked at their holiday movies?
Yeah, no,
it's pretty bad.
And that's the thing. They're capable of a high standard, but they're also capable of very low standards.
But I have also seen friends who are like having a great time watching these schlocky holiday movies. So
yeah.
If there is a niche, content to fill niches.
Oh sure.
Whether or not you approve for it.
Oh no, I'm not saying it won't be
so
good for some people. I'm just saying I don't think it's going to be.
So the guy that's developing is Steve Blackman, who was part of Altered Carbon. I think he show ran it.
Okay.
Which is not bad.
That's interesting.
And written by, it says Jeremy Slater, which I'm not sure.
It's Christian Slater's son.
Sure.
Or possibly Helen Slater's son. Yeah?
Lazarus Effect, which was a mediocre sci-fi horror film. Fantastic Four.
Yep, there it is.
That's also a Death Note,
people,
so he works for Netflix.
People who don't understand how things are supposed to work, yeah.
Yeah,
if you bring in someone who doesn't get it, that's going to put a death knell.
That's what wrote for Exorcist, the TV series, and I did like that.
We'll see. Yeah. It's too early to say. I was hoping for a trailer that would blow me away, and I thought it was kind of meh. The trailer that I liked, that I think Dave found kind of meh, possibly, is the Godzilla King of Monsters trailer.
Yay!
Sorry, I liked it.
I think I was... I've only, watched that on my phone, and I feel like I need to watch that on at least my TV or see it at the theater. I liked it enough to post it on Facebook, which usually means I found something in it.
Yeah.
I liked that all my friends are like, this trailer alone has more monsters
more
in it than
the previous Godzilla. That's actually true.
Yeah. There's something about the little glimpses of dialogue and stuff where I'm like, the dialogue already feels a little wincy to me.
Yeah, I can see that.
But the creatures look neat. I like that there's enough neat bits that aren't not even just the monster stuff. There are occasional interesting plot ideas and stuff percolating in there.
Also, they've got a pretty good cast of people. It's the girl from Stranger Things.
Right, it's 11.
Kyle Chandler.
Yep.
And who's the girl? It's the one from Conjuring.
Who
plays with the Warrens, Vera Farmiga.
Yeah.
I think they're playing the Monarch. And
I was
Ken Watanabe.
I was reminded that the writer and director is the Trick or Treat guy.
It's Michael Dougherty who's
in
Trick or Treat.
Okay, that's a good sign.
I still need to
however,
see Trick or Treat.
It's worth noting that he also did the story for X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah.
He also wrote
story, so maybe it
story
was
by,
could have been good
he
before
also,
they.
He also wrote Krampus, which is solid.
I like Krampus.
Great.
And
I feel Krampus
he
is
also
above
did
solid.
The screenplay for Superman Returns. So I'm just saying,
it's an interesting batch.
He is capable of really because Trick or Treat is legit great.
Okay, I need to watch Trick or Treat.
But
it's very good.
He is hit or miss. He can be hit or miss. So. But that did make me interested too because that's a name I'm like, oh, this isn't Gareth Edwards who is kind of boring.
Yep. There's among the cool things in it, like all the creatures look super neat.
Yeah.
But there's I can't remember, did they show Godzilla underwater or something like
that?
They did. There's several creatures I didn't know, but the big thing is King Ghidorah, the big three-headed beast, looks amazing, huge.
Yeah.
And there's a thing where Godzilla is just running full tilt at him, and they are just look like they're gonna wreck the
world. Their monster fight stuff looks cool if they can pull it off. I also like the concept of, is it Monarch?
Yeah.
The monster hunting organization. Mm-hmm. I like that. That was supposed to be their shared universe concept, and unfortunately it hasn't paid off. It's been kind of blah.
Yeah.
But the idea is there, and
it
could really work.
Kong.
They use it in Kong, and Kong is good, but not great. They haven't managed great yet.
I think it is above what I expected.
Kaiju movies to me are a little bit like video game movies probably wish they could be like that, but they're never gonna, I feel like they may never hit a great one. The closest we're gonna get is Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
And that actually was kind of, that might have been great in its own pulp way.
This feels a little Pacific Rim to me, especially the apocalypse and all the monsters and that kind of stuff.
Yep.
They just need some giant robots.
Mechagodzilla?
Mechagodzilla.
Yeah, that probably works something up with that.
Are we going to get Kong again, I guess? I mean,
if that would be a cool stinger to do that in.
Yeah.
Kong of Skull Island gave us a much larger and more kind of ferocious Kong.
Yeah, the largest Kong ever.
Yep. And he hates helicopters.
He hates helicopters.
He does.
He doesn't jump on them. He just smashes.
He jump on and smash on helicopters. All right.
He'll log smash him.
So Brian K. Vaughan has signed a 3-year overall deal with Legendary Entertainment. Legendary, of course, the guys who are doing the Godzilla movies.
Yep.
They've done some other stuff. Legendary seems like a hit or miss operation.
They are.
But this is a huge thing for them because we're talking about Saga, Paper Girls, Barrier, Ex Machina, all that possibility. Like, that's a possibility. And I don't know if this also means if he's going to do other original stuff for them.
I don't know. I saw this and
maybe
I was like,
maybe it's the year he sells out.
I mean, he's always worked in Hollywood. That's
take a year off from Saga and be a Hollywood
shill.
So here's
the thing. Legendary's film slate coming up is Godzilla vs. Kong. So I guess that's happening. Dune.
I knew that was happening.
Detective Pikachu.
Yep. I knew that was one of their kind of notables.
On TV, they've done Lost in Space, and they're doing the Pacific Rim anime. It's not bad.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Well, I'm trying to think. I mean,
these guys definitely kind of embrace genre material.
Yeah.
So are all of Vaughn's properties getting made, or are they optioning just all of them?
It's not clear.
Because are they doing Why the Last Man? Or?
It does say they'll adapt several of his creator-owned comics and produce exclusive original Vaughn-created projects. Now, Vaughn, of course, has worked in TV before on Lost and on Under the Dome, one of which was good, one of which was not.
It's true.
I don't know. There's FX is doing Why the Last Man, and that's not Legendary.
No.
And Runaways is on Hulu, and that's also not Legendary. So I'm not sure if we're talking about Paper Girls, Saga.
But I guess Why the Last Man was Vertigo, which is owned by DC, and that's why it's on FX. And,
yeah.
But, so I guess that just means Saga, Paper Girls. I mean, either of those could really work. I think the budget is going to be.
What else has he done recently? He's got that. He did that like Private Eye thing, and he also what was the one that was the border thing?
Barrier and We Stand on
Guard.
Barrier and We Stand on Guard. So those also potentially in the mix.
Those are all on the list.
Interesting.
I mean, was Barrier could. I mean, that could be easily made, right? That wasn't, like, high...
And it had
it's got
UFOs.
Some sci-fi elements to it, yeah. But you could make
Private Eye is also... But that I could see more. Saga and Paper Girls...
Saga's tough.
I feel like you have to have, like, a
Paper
really...
Girls not that hard.
There was
it's got some weird...
I mean, I haven't read much of it,
it does have a giant water bear.
There's tons of, like, sci-fi elements to it, so...
But now the Star Trek Voyager has done a water bear, the technology's there.
Star Trek Discovery.
Discovery, what did I say?
But yeah, Voyager.
Ballpark.
do you know that there's a guy who made a video game and has, like, a lawsuit against them because he made a, like... It actually hasn't come out, but it's, like, a low-budget fan-made video game that seems to have a giant water bear in space in it.
Wow. And that's going to go really well for him, because Paramount, there's not a very big organization of water bears, so...
I also... Father and I...
have water bears in it, too?
They did, yeah.
Father and I looked into it, and it seems like a pretty weak claim.
Yeah.
However... it's worth watching the video that shows side-by-sides and attempts to make the case for him, because his seems to have, like, giant water bear love in it.
Okay.
Like there's a thing where the guy's standing there, and they're like, the giant water bear is behind him, and it's kind of its arms clasping lovingly.
Okay.
And he's naked.
Great.
Interesting.
This has been a disturbing podcast.
What else are people here for, Randy? They knew what they were cutting into.
I don't think they did.
Brought to you by Man Loving Water Bear.
I ain't judging.
All right. Also in development, Warner Brothers are developing Plastic Man. It's early in development.
Yeah.
But Amanda Adoku, who wrote an upcoming Allison Janney Laura Dern movie, Breaking News in Yuba County, is supposedly they're attached to write it.
I think I literally think Warner Brothers or whoever is just like throwing darts at a wall.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Let's make a Plastic Man movie. Sure.
You know what? I can see a Plastic Man. If Shazam works, Plastic Man's an obvious.
Yeah, Plastic Man is definitely an obvious.
Plastic
one.
Man is kind of the way he's become for like the last decade or two is sometimes a little bit of a Motormouth, slightly Deadpool-esque kind of crazy shape changing dude.
True test to see if you can make a stretchy man work.
Yeah, that's true.
That's not worked on any other. I mean,
unless Fantastic Four comes out first.
That's true. I mean, they've tried FF and it does not work well.
But I don't think the problem was Stretchy Man technology.
No,
it'll help them to have better tech. Better special effects tech.
You're saying that the FF movies were bad?
I'm going to say the writing might have been an issue. The casting might have been an issue. The conceptualization of Doctor Doom and Galactus arguably the two greatest villains of the Marvel Universe might have been an
reduced
issue.
Reduced to a crappy Doom and a sentient swarm of nanites.
A sort of smarmy, kind of trashy Doom and a cloud.
Yeah.
Not after Nip-Tuck.
I know.
He is probably like, curse you, Dave!
Yeah.
Julian McMahon.
Randy goes after Bendis, I go after the guy from Nip-Tuck.
It's Julian McMahon.
In your face!
Julian McMahon is correct.
Julian McMahon.
We had some angry fan mail from Julie McMahon this week.
I don't.
Hey, you know what? I'm a huge Bendis fan. I didn't like what Randy had to say.
Julie McFan. I like Plastic Man. My favorite version of him is like the old 40s stuff where he was kind of off in his own world. And then I like him periodically in the DC universe after that happened. But would we presume this to be a DC project and not some standalone movie?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, well, they're all standalones now. They don't have any continuity.
But they've
ditched their...
Right, but in other words, a option to use DC villains and, Justice League and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yes. I don't know. I think the continuity's still there. It's just loose.
Yeah.
I thought they officially decided they weren't going to do it.
I don't think anything has been officially said.
All right.
I mean... We'll see how Aquaman does.
Right.
And then we'll know.
So Conan the Barbarian is coming back to Marvel. We know this. It comes out in a couple weeks here. It's going to make both Dave and Nick's best of the year list, I'm hearing.
Hey, absolutely. It's possible. I like Jason Aaron. I like Mahmoud Asrar. So, I mean...
Yep.
There's potential.
I'm going to be like, it's the best series of the entire year based on this one issue.
It's an issue I have not read yet.
Yes.
Conan is also coming to the Marvel Universe. The cover of the 6-issue Avengers No Road Home shows Scarlet Witch teaming up with him in the Hyborian Age against the Queen of Night, and it suggests that might like bring Conan into the 616 for a little while. This is interesting.
I gotta say, real quick, I like that the storyline isn't actually quite so obvious as, like, say, Wolverine and Conan, which I know they'll get around to eventually.
Right.
But they're probably like, let's keep that one set aside for a big day. But I like the idea that it's somebody somewhat unusual, like a magic user, like Scarlet Witch,
Remember, Conan doesn't like magic and witches. He's probably going to chop her head off.
You know what he's going to be? He's going to be like, what sorcery is this?
Exactly, he will.
So you think the Wolverine would be the biggest crossover they could do?
I mean, they've done it before. Wolverine and Conan and What If was a thing.
Yeah. I want him to team up with Thor. I think that would be cool.
Conan and Thor makes a lot of sense.
It makes sense personality-wise, but their power levels are very disparate.
Yeah, but if you did something in Asgard where...
Either Conan got amped or something where Thor was like more of a depowered guy and just had to be the badass warrior he is.
Yeah. Yep. Doesn't have his hammer or something.
But maybe they should fight at their actual power levels and want Thor one hits him.
Smashes his brains in.
Yes.
What did we say his name was? That doesn't matter.
Okay, I take it down a notch. What if it's Hercules and Conan?
Hercules is the same power level as Thor.
Not many people think that.
He's just less famous.
He will also squash Conan like a grape.
How about Gilgamesh?
We're still pretty close. I mean, we're going less famous, but just as able to smash Conan like a grape.
D-Man Conan?
D-Man can smash Conan like a grape. Doesn't matter how famous they are.
That's how they should have. They should begin at their first.
Conan's taken on like demons and monsters too.
But it's more like he's like sometimes he works with people who are a little spellcasty himself, and he sneaks around in the shadows and then stabs the wizard when they're not ready.
Yeah,
that's his main power. He can't like block a spell with his sword.
Right.
Yeah. So he's less a barbarian as more of
a skulker.
Ranger.
He's a skulker. He's a
rogue. Conan's a rogue. He's called the barbarian, but he's a rogue.
Conan the Rouge. what are we talking about? This
Conan's coming to the Avengers. And
oh, right. Like, will it be? I did see somebody who's a friend of mine who said, being a little cranky pantsy, he's like, that if something happened in a What If, that they maybe are out of ideas if they have to make it happen in the regular universe. In other words, Conan should not cross over into regular Marvel.
But I think it's a fun thing to do for a one off.
To me, do we think it's a one-off?
I bet
it's a one-off unless it works. But
right,
but it'd be easy to, you know, like, just as an example, kind of going back to the toy franchises in my youth, ROM and Micronauts started as toys but had successful, smartly written comics and were absolutely set in the Marvel Universe. Didn't always have guest stars, but periodically did.
Yeah.
So if Conan occasionally, like, if there was... Almost, I guess, the same way Jonah Hex occasionally interfaces
with... If he ran into, say, the Black Knight.
Right, the Black Knight, or even it had the occasional crossover thing. You know, Kulan Goth doing something that affects stuff in the present, and Conan is required by the Avengers to stop him.
I'm happy with Conan in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, you wouldn't be bothered by it?
Would not be bothered at all.
I'm good with a little of it. Yeah.
I mean, Jason Aaron's writing Avengers. He's going to be writing Conan. It makes sense.
What if Sherlock Holmes also...
Sure, why not?
Sure.
He probably already is.
Yeah.
What if Sherlock Holmes, Conan, and the Avengers teamed up?
What if it was Robert Downey Jr.'s specific Sherlock Holmes?
Yeah, okay.
What if they did the Michael Bay Transformers specifically?
Nope. Okay, I'm out.
Okay.
I just had to find the limit.
Yeah, that's the limit.
Anyway.
Until Bumblebee
Randy, are you down if they use him a little bit more occasionally?
Sure, I'm fine with it.
I think I am too.
It's not the weirdest thing Marvel's done.
Yeah.
Not even in the top 10.
What's hilarious, though, if you think about it, and this is the history of all licensed properties in Marvel or DC universes, which is those franchises tend to move around and change ownership. And if it happens again and Marvel loses it, that they're going to have difficult reprint times.
Jim Zub, the writer of this, has said that he's been assured it is future-proof for reprinting.
Okay.
That does speak to it possibly being limited use if they're not like... They got something where it's like, we're always going to have the rights for him to appear in these comics.
Right.
But I don't know. Last bit of news. This is the Ghost in the Shell is coming to Netflix with a new series in 2020. Did anyone watch Ghost in the Shell?
I did. Okay. I watched the movies and then I watched the standalone complex, which I actually thought was better than the movies.
Yep.
Because it had a good sense of... It also had a sense of humor with their little Tamagotchi, their little robot droids, which were fantastic. But I actually thought the Major and... the other characters were really well-rounded, too.
Is this a live-action thing, Randy?
No, this is anime.
Okay, so, because, of course, Netflix has had a super bad history with live-action.
But anime. I think, like, some good creators are involved in this, and it's not them just sort of half-assing it.
Yeah, it's Appleseed's Shinji Aramaki, and Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex's Kenji Kameyama.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's got a good pedigree.
I don't watch the anime, so this is I'm neutral on this.
I'm in the same boat.
I'll watch it.
It sounds like they put together some good creators, so hopefully it will work out.
All right. That's news for the week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. One familiar cry. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, December 12th. Nick, you want to kick us off here?
Sure. I'm going to talk about Miles Morales' Spider-Man number 1.
It's Miles Morales this week. He's got his movie opening this
year. That's true. I also want to note that this has the largest number 1 on a comic book I've ever seen.
I'm in favor of this. When it's actually number 1s, like giant ones.
So it is, it is as tall as the main font for the book.
Yeah.
The main title that says Spider-Man.
Which I hadn't seen before, which I thought was cool.
I hadn't noticed that until you mentioned it, but yeah, that's kind of cool.
So, everyone should talk. Stop hiding their numbers. Just put all numbers that big.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm fine with that.
Especially on those DC covers that are just pure art covers and nobody can see crap.
Yep. And everyone should put numbers on the spine of their trade paperbacks.
Correct. And they should all match.
They should all match. Okay. But back to Miles Morales, Spider-Man number 1. I wasn't sure about this one.
Because
the writer of this is Saladin Ahmed, who has kind of had a rocky track record with us.
He's more hit than miss for you.
Yeah. I've liked his Black Bolt and I... What was the other thing you said he did?
He did Exiles.
Exiles, which I did not.
He's done something else I didn't like too. Everything he's done, I have actively disliked, except for his Miles Morales annual or his Spider-Man annual that did with Venom.
Yeah.
And I really liked that, so I was hoping.
So, and here he's got a great take on Miles.
It's really good.
I mean, from the get-go,
we're
just sort of jumped into Miles Morales' everyday life, and kind of giving a hit-by-hit on. Who he is, how he got his powers. It's a
his
good
supporting
little...
cast.
So this works well for somebody who's never.
Oh yeah, if you have a lot of love, don't have any love for the character, have never kind of read anything with him, but have liked the trailers for Into the Spider-Verse.
Right.
This is a great jumping on point.
And that's smart because I think that's the majority of the audience for Miles.
Yep. It's true.
I love Miles Morales as a character. But I have not read a lot of his books because a lot of them were Bendis.
Right.
Yeah.
I've read the occasional like group appearance.
Yeah. He showed up in like a big crossover or something like that.
This is a straight up new ongoing series, right?
Yes.
Yep.
And I will say I love the conceit of the opening where he is in a writing class and he is given a journal that he has to sort of write in, and the whole conceit is. No one can look at the journal. If you do, you fail the class. It's only
so
his.
He can be honest.
So he can be honest with himself.
So that's how we get our narration boxes.
Which I love. I thought that was a clever idea.
It's very clever.
I also have to mention right off the bat that Javier Garon does amazing work on the art.
The art is fantastic.
He gives each character a great sense of personality, and the action has got this great fluidity.
A little bit Umberto Ramos.
Yeah.
But
a little reined in, though. It's definitely more readable. But his best friend Genki is still there, which is great because he's been around forever, known him since he was 3. You get a history of sort of his mother and father. I like the dynamic between him and his mom. And
me too. I actually, they modified like his backstory. Like, and he's a slightly different backstory in various places because there was Ultimate version.
Yeah, when they
got the video game version.
In.
So, but like his dad was like a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent apparently.
Yep.
And his uncle is now the new Iron Spider.
Iron Spider.
Whoa. Which wasn't his uncle the Prowler.
It was the Prowler in the Ultimate Universe.
Okay.
But in the regular 616, when 616 got melted into...
Bendis has been writing long enough to have his creations retconned. That's interesting.
Take that, Bendis.
He's probably actually okay with it. For better or worse, Bendis is kind of a team player.
Yeah, yep. He is. And then we're sort of introduced to his high school life and, like, a love interest. The lack of sleep that he's getting. It's very kind of Peter Parker-ish in a lot of ways, which I thought was great. And then we're slowly introduced to a threat, which I thought the bigger threat was a fun idea. There's a Spider-Man guest star villain
The villain they use is great, and I like the way he writes them.
Yeah, I was going to say, it feels like Spider-Man in the best way while still being something new.
Yeah, I agree.
Which... I think this may be my favorite version of Miles Morales, which is weird because, I mean, usually I like to say that the creator is writing the best.
Right.
And Bendis did write a good character.
Sure.
But I feel like this one is a little bit, I don't know, there's something about it, something more unique.
This feels like, I mean, Miles has been, because of the nature of him being tied to the Ultimate Universe, he's felt a little bit like he's been trapped in some old continuity.
Yeah.
And this does feel like his fresh start that he really needed.
Yeah. And I like
that. There's a rough punch he took in that panel that I saw.
Yeah.
I don't guess we want to say who he's fighting.
No.
But I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. By the way, there's also some interesting stuff here. Because Miles is half black, half Puerto Rican, they inject a little bit of the stuff about ICE and children's attention.
Yeah. Yep.
And they do it with a superhero, supervillain flair. So
nice.
I liked that, too.
Yeah. There's nothing bad I could say about it or any problems
I
have.
It's
a great first issue.
Yeah.
If I can't hear at least one bad thing about it, then I don't trust you.
Well, I'm sorry.
Well...
It says right on the cover, new creative team, new direction, your new favorite book.
How about this?
And I have to agree.
The prophecy is fulfilled.
I can give you a negative thing.
All right.
Genki's a dumb name.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's all I needed. All right, I'll read it.
I will say there are plenty of people in this world who have dumb names.
Yes, that's true. But Dave was looking for a negative.
That's true.
That's
he was looking
negative
for a negative.
By the way, I believe it's pronounced Gahunke.
Gahunke.
Dave, what's your pick?
All right, my pick is the a one-shot spinoff from Jeff Lemire's Black Hammer universe, the somewhat ridiculously named Cthulhuese.
Yes.
I remember when we were ordering this and I came across this for the first time, I died laughing. And I know that's probably not the proper reaction for what you want.
Well, it's meant to be, the name is clearly goofy.
Yeah.
For people who read Sherlock Frankenstein, you know that there was a supervillain named Cthulhu.
It was actually mentioned in the first volume of Black Hammer.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
He is. He's a poor plumber who found Cthulhu in the sewers.
Yes, he did. And he's almost like an abusive dad.
He is. He's a crappy person.
He's a scumbag.
Yeah.
But in kind of a mundane way for a guy who basically has a Cthulhu head.
Yeah.
And this is about his daughter, Cthulhuese.
Awesome.
And the book is a kind of a mixture of some of that silliness with some kind of real kind of teen angst because... Essentially, so you've got this girl who, her mother is human, her dad is a Cthulhu man, she got the Cthulhu man genes.
Yep.
Which is to say, her hair is tentacled, she has multiple eyes, she's got chin tentacles, she's green.
Is she a villain?
She's a normal student who's trying to get by with a kind of, the parents, the mom is like more like, well, it's not delinquent. What's the word I'm looking for?
The mom is, she works a lot.
She's neglectful. Yes.
Okay.
There's extreme neglect in her family. The dad is borderline abusive, kind of.
Actually
and like,
abusive.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if he like hits
he
her.
Does
he? Okay. Oh, that's right. That's right. And he's also sort of like, you got to toughen up, kid.
Yeah.
And he's a piece of shit.
Yep.
And like the kids at school, the way they bully her, this is where the series, I was telling Randy, like sometimes you're reading like a Jeff Lemire book and like the Black Hammer stuff, and it's got some serious situations in it, but you just suddenly start to get to like some heavy swearing and you're like, oh, this is darker than I thought.
Right.
And like the kids at school are mean in the way kids really are, and yeah. It's horrible.
It's not fake comic book bullying.
And what the heart of this story is her kind of trying to decide. Her grandfather is like the Lovecraftian creature that lives in the sewers and converted her dad to like this monster back in the day.
That's a cool idea.
And the voices have started calling her. So when she's walking to school, which she hates and dreads, she'll hear these voices kind of come up through the sewers, and you'll be like, "It's your time, Cthulhuese." And she has to decide: do I want to make the same kind of dark pact he did? Do I want to like go down that path of this asshole? But also that could be a path away from sort of the bullying and violence she has to face.
How old is she supposed to be?
Like 14, 15.
Yeah, like it feels like she could be a freshman in high school.
Really?
It's got actually really great art from Emmy Lennox.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
I don't know who that is. I don't know if
she
that's a guy or a girl.
She worked. It's her. She worked with Lemire on Plutonia.
Okay. But I really like the artwork. It's the character designs are great. It kind of does have this lighter look. And yet, there's some obviously those dark turns. Actually, like I love the designs on all the Lovecraftian stuff. And there's like a little like I don't know like a little harbinger rat.
Yeah.
He's like a herald
yeah.
for the monster in the sewers
yeah.
That I liked. This is a standalone, and her decision is interesting, and the way it ends is very interesting.
So is this just a one-shot?
It's a one-shot, and it's kind of about... It almost has a Twilight Zone-esque quality to it, especially the ending, and there is kind of a question of, you know, what will you do to fit in? You know, what price would you pay? And do you think that if you did this, that a Cthulhu-type monster god would give you exactly what you want?
Hmm. Is this the first one-shot that we've seen from Black Hammer?
I think so. They've done four-issue miniseries.
Yeah.
But this is the first one-shot, to the best of my knowledge, and actually could be read independently of the rest.
Okay.
Like a lot of his stuff, one of my favorite qualities of Jeff Lemire's work on Black Hammer and many of the other books he does is that you can jump into an issue, and even if you've kind of forgotten what's going on or you haven't read the related miniseries, he will deliver a standalone story. It's almost like he got kind of some of that energy from like the Marvel comics I grew up in the 80s,
yeah.
Where, yes, they might have been part of a bigger tapestry, but you get this really satisfying read that, without doing cheesy exposition, catches you up on all the key stuff you need to know. So yeah, I really liked it. And obviously people who are reading Black Hammer, which is now this like multi-award-winning series about to become TVs and movies stuff. But if you just kind of wanted to get a little sample of the weird universe that it is, you could do worse than reading this standalone issue.
Very cool.
Randy, what you got?
So my pick is Magic the Gathering Chandra, number one.
What?
I don't think anybody expected this.
Nope. So I've played Magic back in the day very, very
yep.
early on, but I don't know a ton about the world other than what I pick up from when we sell it, which we sell a lot of Magic here. And I read the Magic comics when they did like the Ice Age or the Lost Age or whatever it was,
yeah.
like way back when, and they were mediocre at best. But the Magic world seems like one that's sort of ripe for exploring, so what they're doing is they're focusing on what they call the Planeswalkers, who are essentially these superheroes of the Magic universe. They can cross planes... go to different dimensions where most people can't. They have, like, massive magical powers. And as Chandra here explains, she's like, most of us are pretty good. There are some bad guys. Mostly we go to help other worlds. So this is... Chandra is a youngish fire mage. She goes to several different worlds. In the opening, she saves a kid from a swamp monster, a plant monster on Dominaria, which is one of their worlds.
Oh, I didn't realize that those were, like, actually separate
yep,
worlds. That's kind of cool.
So she goes in, she rescues this kid, and she's like, I'll come back, and you tell me how things work out for you. And then it shows her jumping between Tarkir, Ixalan, which is, like, the pirate world, Alara, Kaldheim, all these other worlds, and back to Kaladesh, which is her home world. I don't know all these worlds other than like recognize the names, yeah. But each of them gives a little, like Kaladesh looks like maybe a like European fantasy world.
You know what's interesting? Just in describing it, this I feel like this comic may be doing its job because I do know those names just from selling them again, and it's kind of making me want to read it and kind of know more of the lore.
She goes home, and there's a big white lion man named Ajani, who is like her buddy planeswalker, and her mom's a planeswalker, and they sort of talk about her adventuring.
I've seen that character in Planeswalker decks.
Yep, he's cool looking. And then she, like, something's going on out there. She goes to try and stop a volcano. Basically, she's off having, like, superhero-style adventures with magic. It's really good. The character stuff is interesting. The art is really good. It's by Harvey Tolabao, who is a guy who's been around for a while. He's a Filipino artist. He did some Avengers The Initiative. He did recent Green Arrow stuff. He did a Silver Surfer miniseries. But he's a guy I would think of as more of a... He's like a Zenoscope top couch kind of dude. But his stuff here is really, really strong. Like, I really like his storytelling. I like his character designs.
I was going to say, this first shot we see of Chandra and kind of surrounded with
And the thing that when you see his planeswalkers, like, they look cool. The same way, like Magic or Pathfinder or D&D guys. Like, they've got little accoutrements on their wardrobe.
Yeah, yeah. They brought some of that detail to it.
Yeah. So this was really fun and makes me want to learn more about these worlds. So it did its job. The only thing I would say about it is I wish they'd done a little more explaining, like, what a planeswalker is.
Right.
But I guess...
A little bit of baseline.
All you need to know for this comic is someone who could walk between worlds.
Right.
And it works on that basis, so I really liked it. My backup pick is Fantastic Four Wedding Special by Gail Simone and Dan Slott, and also Fred Hembeck, if you know cartoonist Fred Hembeck.
There folks who were reading comics in the 80s know that he was the key... goofy cartoonist of the 80s.
This is called The Wedding Special. It is essentially the Bachelor Party Special. So, Miguel Simone and artist Laura Braga do a story of the Bachelorette Party. So, Alicia Masters goes out with Sue Storm and some of the characters from the, I think, Matt Fraction's FF run, maybe. Some of the artists, along with Jennifer Walters, Medusa, and Crystal. They go to a strip club, which is hilarious because Alicia, of course, can't see strippers. And they figure out a way that works. They are, of course, attacked by the Mole Man, sort of. And it's a lot of fun. It has actually a nice sweet payoff, which is what you expect from Gail Simone. And then there's a second story that has Ben Grimm basically going to seek Alicia Masters' father's approval, which is interesting because her father is the puppet master, who is not generally an approving type of dude. And that's really good. It's got some solid artwork. And this was a nice little teaser for the wedding to come. So I recommend it if you like sort of a little bit of romantic sappiness in your superhero comics.
A wedding which I am, if I were a betting man, will come off, unlike, say, the Batman wedding, but like the Rogue Gambit,
there'll be some kind of twist. So here's an interesting thing. In the ad for Fantastic Four, which is going to have the wedding, no bait, no switch, not a dream, not a hoax. And I'm like, it's a little bit...
A little bit of a knife.
Yeah, a little bit of a knife at DC, yep. I think.
Yep. And to be fair, Marvel themselves did a bait and switch with Kitty and Colossus.
They just did it better. You know what's funny, Dave, is the other day you were selling someone the Batman the Wedding album.
Yes.
Or they were asking about it, and they bought the trade.
Yep.
And I think both of us wanted to tell them, like, hey, the wedding doesn't happen. But you don't want to ruin it.
Right,
like,
he made very clear he didn't want to know...
Yeah.
With anything that happened in it, so he's like, I've been out of things. He's like, I got to catch up on this.
But we're like, you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah. Well, we didn't say that.
No.
That's what we're thinking.
But that's what we're thinking.
Now and, that said, he may read it, enjoy the writing like Nick does, and think this is interesting. So they didn't get married, but what a good story.
Yeah. It feels like bait and switch to me. I don't like having to sell it. I wish they could have said the non-winning of Batman and Catwoman or something.
Most people are not so hardcore about spoilers that I would probably have told him the basic deal with it, that the wedding didn't come off, but there was, you know, there's like lots of big reveals and sort of the way what's happening is part of this overall tapestry.
I would never want to tell anyone something that big about a book they're about to read.
Maybe. I guess. I don't know. I feel like it's like so much out there in the ether, but but maybe not. Maybe not.
Dave, what is your secondary pick?
My secondary pick is the I think like quarterly anthology that IDW puts out for Star Trek Waypoint.
Mm-hmm.
This is like their anthology series where each issue of it has like a few different stories and they can kind of pull from any Trek timeline they want. And with an anthology, you're going to get a few hits sometimes and a few misses. And I have to say, like, the first story I felt was a miss. The second story was a big hit and why I'm picking it. And the third story I was kind of meh on while I was reading it. Then, but by the end, I kind of liked it. So
I feel like in a Star Trek book, there should be four stories.
There are four.
Oh, there are four stories! That's all I wanted to do.
Was it four lights joke?
Yeah, it was a four lights joke.
I just want to do that for the audience out there, just so they know.
Continue on.
All right. First story is about Dax from Deep Space Nine in this kind of like a big combat mission, dangerous mission. And I guess this is something I actually haven't seen enough Deep Space Nine to know, but you know how like that she's like got the parasite sort of symbiotic thing?
Yeah.
And she can call on various past versions of it, links for information like, oh, I don't know how to get past this door. Oh, well, there was a previous Dax who was an engineer, and I will call upon that person.
Do you think that she retains the knowledge of all video games she's played, so she knows all the cheat codes?
I would assume so.
Yeah.
Is that a serious question?
Yeah.
But they only play kind of hologram games.
That's
that
true.
Turn out to be, that was like a drug.
It turns out to be Dr. Moriarty in the holodeck.
Anyway, I kind of didn't like this story. It was weird because it was like she was basically consulting with all her past selves, and in a weird way it kind of made her seem less cool because it was like any problem that comes up, she just asks some expert in it and doesn't actually have to do anything heavy lifting herself.
I can see that. It's a cool concept, though. I like the idea.
Yeah, it was actually decently executed, but yeah, I wasn't in love with it. The second story, this one was a solid one. Q, there's a new Q is added to the continuum, and he's like, the Q we know is like, I'm going to walk you through what it means to be a god. He, of course, is a great tour guide of it. But there's an Star Trek insider stuff, because I think it's okay to know. In the horrible Star Trek The Motion Picture, at the end, like, V'ger combines with, like, Matt Deckard and Ilya, the chick with the bald chick, like, into, like, one sort of single, like, godlike being, and that is the being that who it is in this. So he's got his humanity and stuff, and Q is sort of saying, like, don't start making moral decisions or whatever, like, you know, like, he gives him an example. He's like, here's a Starfleet battle where one of your, you know, boring, you know, tribal, like, border disputes is happening. And look, here's some people that that you probably like who are about to get blown up. You could stop it, but it's like, is that what you're going to do? And he's trying to show him that he does not need to adhere to morality anymore and convince him to carry on sort of in his own Q style.
Okay.
Anyway, it actually ended up being good. Maybe the only good thing that's ever come out of Star Trek The Motion Picture, other than the theme music, which they use for Star Trek Next Generation.
What's the third story?
The third story is what I'm here for, is what you're there for. It's Data and Spot.
Yeah.
It's an adorable story that made me a little teary-eyed. That's told from the perspective of Spot, and kind of using the, you know, not broken English, but, you know, a simplified version of English, as Spot kind of has patterns that, is it she? I actually don't know.
I don't know either.
Is it he or she? I'm gonna say she. I don't know
if Data knows.
I feel like, I don't know either. But what happens, there is a plot to it. It is not just kind of casual. There is some funny cat humor. I won't lie. There's some stuff where Spot has, like, these dreams at times, and they kind of seem, like beyond a normal cat, like, you know, a little bit wistful and imaginative. And she's like, these things are dreams, but I make do. And you just see her knocking a pot off of a table. It's like, so
even in the future.
Even in the future, cats just still knock shit over.
Yep.
But what happens is one day Lore walks in, Data's evil brother.
Oh, okay.
And immediately the cat's like, this is wrong, something is different. And there's like a sort of violent incident that's a little heartrending. Things are okay in the end, but it was a really good little story about the link between a cat and her human.
That's cool.
And then the last story was one that I had to make up my mind as I got near through it. But I ended up liking. That's about an alien civilization that looks kind of like what we would think of as primitive thatched huts and things like that. And there's a they're telling a story about. I take it back. I believe that their flashback. Their history has it that they barely survived their initial meetings with the Federation, and that the Federation was this dangerous expansionist thing that that they had to escape from.
Hmm.
And it seems kind of clear that they have some sort of doctored history.
Huh.
And this is the story about one of the aliens, kind of like a young kind of truth finder kid, who's kind of like, I've heard other stories. I don't think the official history that we're being sold is true. And it's kind of about him trying to essentially argue that, you know, he's like, I've heard that the Federation was actually a force for good and that, you know, they tried to protect people. And they're like, this is heresy and you will be banished. And, you know, this is the, you're ending your career life as you know it if you hold to this. So it's kind of about having to stand by what you believe in and what you think to be the truth. And it's sort of, this is not a story that ends with he changes their world or anything like that. This is kind of a little bit more of an open-ended story about, like, is he going to be able to live with the consequences of his digging at the truth? And that's a very Star Trek kind of theme, and I liked it. So yeah, overall, I feel like this has a pretty strong track record, even if there's a dumb Dax story in it.
So, Wikipedia has this to say.
Yep.
Spot first appears in the episode Data's Day. Despite her name, Spot is not actually patterned with spots. Spot originally appears as a male Somali cat, but later appears as a female orange tabby cat, eventually giving birth to kittens.
Yay!
Yeah. And in fact, just a few ways down there is the, why does Data's cat Spot change from a male cat to a female cat? So, that was a whole thing.
I forgot to mention that that one was also drawn by the talented cartoonist Sunny Liu.
Oh, yeah.
And has kind of a cartoony but painted style that I really liked. And oh, awesome. If you okay. want to see if you want to see Spot fight with Lore, that happens. That's a thing that actually happens.
Nick, what's your backup pick?
My backup pick is Batman Annual number 3. This is not Tom King.
Nope.
This is not one of the regular artists that we've seen on Batman. This is Tom Taylor and artist Otto Schmidt.
As long as it's a Tom, I'll accept it.
Otto Schmidt, you would know from his run on Green Arrow with Benjamin Percy.
The recent one? Because Green Arrow's had a lot of good artists.
Yeah, he's a good artist.
He's a fantastic artist. And Tom Taylor from Injustice and everything Randy loves.
Mm-hmm. X-23 and all that.
I might even say that Randy liked this issue.
I did like this issue. It was a potential pick for me.
Yeah, because this is all sort of focusing on the relationship between Alfred and Bruce.
Yep. And when you told me that, I was like, I don't know if I want to see that story. But it turns out, as always, Tom Taylor turns into a story I really like.
Yeah, and I don't want to get too much into the ins and outs of this story, because I think it's better if you read it yourself. But know that this is, you know, how the relationship is, how protective Alfred is, and kind of encapsulated with a Batman versus a sort of drone story.
Yeah. What's interesting is that I would have thought, we've seen stories about Alfred's his dad and that kind of thing. But this one, Taylor always brings a different approach to these things. He managed to get some emotional weight into it, and he does that here too. Like, I thought they did a good job of not being manipulative, which I feel like a lot of people are when they do their Alfred stories.
Yeah, it's not saccharine. It's not. It's just kind of.
It's a good story.
It's a good story, and I like all the little nods. Like, I love the Batmobile having like med bay.
Yeah,
it's just such a cool idea, mm-hmm. and Taylor uses all those little cool ideas, and Schmidt just draws the hell out of it. Yeah. There's some splash pages here that are just fantastic.
Tom Taylor to me seems to write the Batman that I think I wish Tom King was writing. That I think a lot of people, and here's the thing, a lot of people react to Tom King's Batman the way that I reacted to this. So I think the people who like Tom King's Batman will also really like this.
I agree.
I guess I will check it out.
Some other things that are on my list. The big one for the week is Batman Who Laughs, number one. Scott Snyder and Jock return to the character after, Snyder returns to after Metal.
Is this more of a horror take than anything? It seems very horrific.
I mean, there's a horrific nature to it, but it is sort of in continuity and introduces another Batman from another alternate dark reality that...
The Batman who doesn't think anything's funny.
No, this is a Batman that uses guns.
Batman who shoots.
And he's scary.
Batman
there is
who chews
a,
tobacco.
There is an assault on Arkham that is flat out feels like assault on Precinct 13. And Jock, as always, kind of brings the horror and kind of this weird kind of darkness to every scene he draws, because he draws like that.
I've seen him both draw like kind of like creepy stuff, but also like sort of kind of gritty espionage stuff.
Yeah, he's a good action writer too.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, even in like Black Mirror, he kind of brought out the horror of that story.
Sure, sure. Although that was Frank Avia doing the more creepy
but
parts
Jock
of
did
it.
Some of it too.
Yeah, Jock
did,
do
some of the creepy stuff.
Yeah, okay. Jock did some creepy stuff too. But yeah, that was a good first issue. A new Vertigo book called Goddess Mode from Zoe Quinn and Robbie Rodriguez, who Robbie Rodriguez is an amazing artist who you know from Spider-Gwen.
Yeah, Spider-Gwen creator.
And this is sort of a set in the future about kind of a sentient AI and a girl whose father is dying from a disease that people can't cure, sort of. And there's definitely sort of some Matrix-like vibes to it.
Yeah.
And the art's gorgeous. Story I thought was really interesting. And I think towards the end you kind of see where the book is ultimately going. And I kind of liked the notion of some larger-than-life stuff as well.
When I was making the sign for it and reading the solicit on it, they kind of referred to the AI that runs things as being godlike. And this maybe some sort of resistance group having the cheat codes is kind of how they put it.
Yeah, she basically has cheat codes. Yeah.
And I was like, that's an interesting notion.
Yeah. Magic Order number 5, which is the penultimate issue for Mark Miller and Olivia Copiel's Netflix series, essentially, because that's what
they're
it is.
Crime Wizards.
Crime Wizards. And some big stuff gets revealed in that one. Wonder Woman number 60, which is G. Willow Wilson's third issue and sort of the reinvention of the god Ares. And introducing a few other gods in here, which I thought was interesting takes on it. I really like what she's doing with Diana and sort of the dichotomy between Ares and Wonder Woman, which is interesting. Supergirl number 25 continues Kara and Krypto's
space
adventures on who destroyed Krypton and who exactly is Zolgar Rol or
Rogolzar.
Gogo
Bordello.
Whatever your name is. Avengers number 11, which is an issue that sees Jennifer Walters and Thor going on a date. It also includes Ursa Major and the reintroduction.
You say Ursa Major like people know who that is.
People should know who.
The people who know.
Look him up.
People need to know who the Dark Stars are.
He's a Soviet bear man.
Not the Dark Stars. Dark Star is a member.
Dark
Star
is a member.
Yeah. AKA the Winter Guard.
Exactly. It also has the reintroduction of a character people thought dead.
Ronan?
No, Phil Coulson, actually. It's on page 1, so.
Can't keep a good Coulson down.
Exactly.
Yep.
And then Batman Damned number 2, the much sought after new Black Label book sees its second issue.
Yep.
And then finally, Batman Detective Comics number 994. This one's a big one because Peter Tomasi and Doug Mankey come back, sort of moving this to issue 1000 and start with the story of a recreation of Thomas and Martha Wayne's murder in the basically down to like plastic surgery and things. Somebody is recreating the murder, which is really weird and of course has psychological effects on Bruce. But there's just some
Times I think if I were Batman I'd be like, I don't think I'm gonna go to work today.
Yeah, I feel like there's but
like so, as soon as Gordon is like, this is terrible, Batman, they've been made to look just like your parents, he'd be like, all right, I'm gonna go home.
You know what? I think
I'm gonna go play Arkham City.
I think Superman can handle
There's also
one.
Some cool usage of Leslie Tompkins, which I liked. And, I mean, Doug Mankey's artwork, I've always liked it ever since.
He's super good.
Under the Red Hood and things like that. Yeah. So, yeah. That is it. Dave, what is
What's
on your
list?
Stack?
Let's see. Just wanted to mention, also from Jeff Lemire this week, the 5th issue of The Quantum Age. Which
is the finale?
There's one more issue.
Okay.
Big stuff is going down. I can't say who the guest star was who showed up in the previous issue, but this guest star plays a huge role in this one.
Did this spoil anything for you? Because I know you're not as up on all the Black Hammer stuff.
Like, it might have a bit, but like because I kind of am not up on it, I don't quite know enough to be fully spoiled by it. But yes, a little bit.
I like that despite this is the super future one, it's tying heavily into like Black Hammer stuff.
Yes, I could tell this is the issue where some things started to come together.
Yeah.
This guy is like their version of like a Swamp Thing person.
Yep.
Dude, that's cool.
Yeah.
I got a question. On the cover, is that tongue in their kiss?
Are they having a tongue kiss?
I think so. It looks like it is.
Yeah. And DC and Marvel can't do it, but Dark Horse can do all the tongue kissing they want.
Yep, Legion of Super fake superheroes want a tongue kiss, they will.
Yeah.
DC has a thing called New Talent Showcase. It's one of those
the third year they've done.
Yeah, yeah. Specials that they do to showcase their new artists and writers. And I did not get a chance to read this, so I cannot comment specifically on it. I can say at a glance the artists were pretty superb.
Yeah, DC's talent scouts do a great job.
Well, and this is also featuring the artists and writers of DC's talent, their workshop.
Yeah, their workshop, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's the stuff they've been doing where, like, people get mentored by sort of known creators.
Yep.
There's a new Planet of the Apes miniseries called Planet of the Apes, The Simian Age. And what's interesting about this is it's sort of an anthology series, not unlike the Star Trek one I mentioned, and it uses continuity from both notable eras, the original era and the new movies era. They, I guess, conveniently bypass the Tim Burton era.
Yeah.
But I think there should be some random one in there about Paul Giamatti's slave trading one, because he was delightful.
Sure.
And I think that is it for me, as far as my stack here.
Champions wraps up with number 27. They have a new number one coming. This is the wrap of their sort of D&D and Weird World. It's really good.
Are there more Crystar people in it?
There are more. The Crystal Warriors. Crystar does make an appearance.
What? Yes! Yep.
X-Men Red comes to a wrap of its big first story with Jean Grey's X-Men facing off against the super powerful Cassandra Nova in a very... human, optimistic way, and which once again reminds me that Tom Taylor is a guy who writes optimistic kind of superheroes in a way that a lot of people don't.
Yep.
He believes in redemption, maybe even more than I do. quite a bit more than I do, actually.
It's nice to have those voices back, because that was kind of the dominant voice in the comics I read as a kid.
Yeah.
There were always these darker stories. There were always stories where, like, the heroes could not win every battle, and sometimes bad stuff happened, especially in X-Men comics.
Yep.
But like, there was enough of a vibe of, like, kind of that their perseverance was vital and necessary and the right thing and heroic. It was inspiring, and I'm pleased to see that Tom Taylor is kind of holding to that.
Dave, does that not then give us the obligation to try?
Thank you for the Chris Claremont speech.
There are four different chapters of Spider-Geddon this week. Spider-Geddon itself, I believe, wraps up next week, but the third issue of Ghost Spider, Spider-Gwen, where she's in a alternate universe where Spider-Gwen has become a Green Goblin, and she has to basically help their Mary Jane rescue her in order to get back to her own universe. There's a fun take on Betty Brant and Glory.
Mm-hmm.
What's Glory's last name? Glory Grant. Glory Grant and Betty Brant.
Oh.
they're investigative reporters together.
I forgot, Stan always joked about how he would do those alliterative names because he couldn't remember names.
Yep.
And I forgot that there were, like, sometimes Peter Parker or Spider-Man alone had any number of them.
Oh, yeah.
From Otto Octavius to Glory Grant.
Spider-Force number 3, which has a team of spider people in the radioactive dimension where they stranded the Inheritors on sort of a suicide mission, written by Priest. Very weird. Spider-Girls number 3, which is Aranya, Mayday Parker, and the daughter from Spider-Man... what's it called? Renew Your Vows. All working together to basically work something else. These are all sort of angles that we're trying to fight the powerful Inheritors.
Mm-hmm.
Side stories, but interesting side stories. And then Peter Parker, Spectacular Spider-Man, wraps up the story where he faces off with Morlun for the fourth time and beats him again. it's done really well. Morlun is never sold out, like, as a bad guy. He's very dangerous, but you get that basically Peter is smarter, tougher, more driven.
Uh-huh.
And there's also a little bit with Jonah Jameson in there that's pretty good. Hawkman number 7 reveals the true nature of the Deathbringer and how he ties into Hawkman. It was an interesting story. Outer Darkness number 2 is more of the sort of space starfaring thing from John Layman and Afu Chan.
It's like horror space.
It's like horror Star Trek.
Yep.
I liked it quite a bit. It's got a little bit of Warren Ellis in it, actually.
There was a cynical edge to the second one that I didn't quite expect, but it's still well made, and I think people should be checking it out.
Skyward number 9. This series is one of my big surprises of the year. It's definitely going to be on my list, if not my top 10. It's up there, but... from the concept of what if there is no gravity, we've now gotten to a place where they're out in the fields and bugs have become giant and they're trying to turn them against the city, and it's a crazy resistance organization. It's a crazy book, lots of crazy concepts and great art, great characters, and I'm really, really liking this as a weird sci-fi concept. I did not quite get to, but just want to mention the Hellboy Winter Special, the next two parts of Best Defense, which are Silver Surfer and Doctor Strange, and the second issue of the Image book, Bitter Root. That will wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo-Jo!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.